Hey guys, today I'm talking to Stephen Snyder. He is a clinical professor of psychiatry, and he wrote a book called Love Worth Making, How to Have Ridiculously Great Sex in a Long-Lasting Relationship. He's going to talk to us a little bit today about what happens when we have sex, how we regress into a childlike state, and how this is actually what creates long-lasting relationships. He offers some awesome tips on what to do if you're having some struggles in the bedroom and wanting more connection and more intimacy in your relationship. He's a pretty fun guy, and I hope you really enjoy this podcast. Hey guys, welcome to the New Paradigm Intimacy podcast. I am your host, Victoria Redbard. I'm here today with Stephen Snyder. Stephen is a clinical professor of psychiatry. He's also wrote a very well-known book called Love Worth Making, How to Have Ridiculously Great Sex in a Long-Lasting Relationship. So hey Stephen, it's really great to have you. Thanks for being here.
I'm delighted to see you. Thank you, Victoria, for having me. Nice to be talking to you halfway around the world.
Yeah, it's exciting. So I brought Stephen on today because I want to talk to him about how sex works as therapy. You know, I've been looking at this concept of, like, you know, it's not actually just like, we all know, like, sex is good for us and it's good for our health, but how exactly does it work to actually help us connect deeper to ourselves and resolve our, you know, past traumas and get a deeper connection to our beloved. So I'd love to hear you share a little bit about that, Stephen.
Okay. Well, I have my own theory about how sex works as therapy, and I talk about it in my book, and it relates to the question of why do people have sex? You know, people very often in the media, they say it has to do with pleasure. Pleasure's okay. But why do people have sex with each other rather than just doing it by themselves? For the most part, it's because people like to regress. People like to have experiences where they can throw off a little bit of their ordinary adult minds and become a little more childish. That's why all the love songs have to do with the baby, be my baby. There's something regressive about really, really good sex. So when people are psychologically sexually aroused, they lose some of their adult coping capacities. People get more easily frustrated. They get more easily hurt. They don't have a lot of same amount of patience. They feel a little more selfish in a way. They may be really into their partner, but they don't really want to hear all about their partner's day. They just want their partner to make nice noises and tell them that everything is wonderful. So basically, when we're really, really psychologically aroused, we're functioning at about a two-year-old level. It's like eating ice cream and having everybody go, yay, that's really where we're at. And so sexually aroused, people act kind of prematurely. They arrive late to things, their time sense gets all distorted. And people find that this kind of regressive experience where you're don't really care whether the phone rings and who it is. You just want them to go away. This is a blissful experience because you get to shake off the usual adult reality sense. You're re-evoking a state of mind, which really goes all the way back to maternal infant bonding and to this early experience of there's really only two people. There's a mother and the infant. And it's pleasurable, but it's also kind of serious. And it's tender, but it's also kind of ruthless. And it's enjoyable, but it's not frivolous. It has kind of a serious quality to it. And so these things, which are kind of paradoxical from an adult point of view, make total sense from a standpoint of view of an infantile state of mind, where the ordinary silos of adult sexual experience, adult psychological experience haven't been formed yet. And everything is all mixed up with physical and the emotional. They all get mixed up, the boundaries get kind of mixed up, and people lose track of time. And as I say in my book, people lose IQ points, and they just get kind of dumb and happy. And that's really what we're going for. When people remember the best sex of their life, they're not necessarily remembering that their partner had such wonderful technique or that they had a great orgasm, because it is hard to remember anyway. People are usually remembering that they really just felt really, really dumb and happy, and they lost track of time, and they just became like a babbling infant. And so that's how sex is healing. It enables us to escape from the bounds of adulthood and just become regressed and more childlike. You know, people come into my office, I want to know that he's getting hard and she's getting wet and that they can have orgasms if they want to, but I really want to know, is can they really get dumb and happy? And is there some giggling going on in the room? That's when you know people are really having good sex. I'm sure you experience that from the people you counsel in Australia.
That's amazing. I love that. I've never heard that way of it being explained before. I really enjoy what you just shared, and I really could resonate with a lot of that work.
Thank you. I mean, I thought a lot about it. Yeah. As a therapist, because, you know, Masters and Johnson spent decades exploring the physiology of arousal and all about my muscle contraction and heart rate and stuff. But what you really add is the psychological experience and the subjective thing is very hard to get to. And nobody talks about it. Really. Nobody really talks about that psychological arousal and what it's like to feel really psychologically turned on, not just hard and wet. Because as you know, you can be hard and wet and not really be that psychologically turned on. So I explored it for years and finally I decided I had to write a book about it. I couldn't find it anywhere. So I figured I had to write it.
Amazing.
And it turns out that's the key. Once you understand that, the state of being psychologically aroused, that's the key to staying happy in a long, committed sexual relationship, which, as you and I know, is the holy grail of sex therapy, not necessarily something you can do. And the key is only focus on whether you're losing IQ points. Nothing else really matters. It doesn't matter whether you're going to have an orgasm or not. It doesn't matter whether you're going to have penetration or not. It doesn't even matter whether you're going to have sex or not. You could be just playing footsie at the dinner table, and as long as you're losing IQ points, you're doing the right thing.
Mm. What's super interesting in that is that I actually have the experience of people that are having more sex are more intelligent. And I think it perhaps is the range, right? The ability to move through all the different states. And when I talk intelligence, I mean, not just academic, but the ability to move through different aspects of themselves. And I think that's what makes it, you know, somebody intelligent.
Okay, so they're more integrated with their whole self. Mm, that makes sense. It's a certain kind of intelligence. If you ask me off the top of my head, I'd say when people are being sexually happy, they're less intelligent. You know, you give them a test to take and they just rip it up and they don't really care. But I guess it's a different kind of intelligence.
I can hear what you're saying. So my thoughts are, right, if we've got this concept that if we need to be able to be having more sex, and if someone's coming to see you as a client in a sex therapy, and your role is to make them more happy and naive and innocent, if that's sort of what we're craving.
Exactly.
So what actually happens in a sex therapy session to allow you to have your clients experience that?
Sure. Well, what I actually begin my book with a scene from my daughter's sixth grade class, where she's in class and people are going around the class asking what their parents do for a living. And she says that I'm a psychiatrist. And her best friend sitting behind her goes, "He's a sex therapist." And the class goes nuts.
Love it.
Finally, after all the hubbub dies down, one shy child in the corner goes, "What does he do?" You know, which is a good question. What do you do? And the answer I always give is the main thing I do is I hear about a lot of bad sex. So I hear about all the different ways people have bad sex. And there's a million ways to have bad sex, but there are some commonalities. So the main thing that I do as a sex therapist is I figure out what people are doing well. For instance, the classic, which I put on page one of my book, is a couple gets together and they start stroking each other's genitals to get each other ready for intercourse. Now, that's the wrong way to do it. Nobody does that when they're first getting together as a couple, on the peak of passion. They only do that when things are not so great and they're just trying to kind of like make things work to get him hard and her wet so they can have intercourse, so they can have orgasms, so they can go to sleep. That's the wrong way to do it. Another wrong way to do it is anything where you rush intercourse is the wrong way to do it. Another thing that's wrong is any time where you're trying to have an orgasm where you're not really aroused. I call this the low road to orgasm. You never want to be on the low road to orgasm. You want to be on the high road to orgasm where you really lost a lot of IQ points. Then you have an orgasm and then it's worth something. So as a sex therapist, I like to see if I can identify for people what the things that are doing that are standing in the way of them having good sex. Very often, all you have to do is let them know what they're doing wrong and they can fix it. So very often you can see people maybe one or two sessions and they can go home and start doing things right. And then they can come back into your office and start being giggling. So it's a little different than the classic sex therapy where you're having people do exercise and homework and stuff like that. I get a little bored with that stuff. But most sex therapists do that classic stuff And I tend to see the people for whom that doesn't work because they get a little bored and they just want to do something a little more organic, a little more natural. So I have people who are focused on the feelings. I don't care what they're doing as long as they're getting silly.
So if someone of our listeners is having a struggle in the bedroom right now and they want to utilize something, do you have like a top tip or something that you can share that maybe they can take home to the bedroom for today?
Yeah, you want to just see what your soul might need in order to use some IQ points. That's all you need, and whatever it is. And maybe it's to be, well, usually for most people, it's to be a little more selfish. You know, you read the magazines and they talk about, you know, giving your partner the most wonderful experience or the most wonderful orgasm. For the most part, that's garbage. It's nice to know what your partner likes, but it doesn't create passion. And most people, if they're not having a passionate experience, they're going to feel there's something wrong. Unfortunately, all the magazine articles, they talk about how to pleasure your partner. They give books and books and books about how to give your partner magnificent pleasure. And for the most part, they're all garbage because passion is selfish. So if you give people a choice, you say, imagine you could have one of two partners, one who just wants to pleasure you totally, and the other that's just so turned on by being in bed with you that they just want to selfishly just exult in being with you. Most people will take the second because basically we all want to be enjoyed. And so the key really for most people is to be a little more selfish in bed and to just enjoy your partner selfishly because it feels good.
I'm almost hearing like, it feels like a taking energy. It feels like an experience of like, how much can I enjoy this person that's in my bed?
Definitely taking energy. Definitely, definitely, definitely. I mean, I hate the idea of giving oral sex. Giving somebody oral sex. Ridiculous idea. You should be taking oral sex.
Taking oral sex. I love it.
You know, one of my favorite sex writers, Ian Kerner, wrote this book on cunnilingus, so she comes first. And he said, you know, before man goes down on a woman, he should give her a verbal affirmation that says, I'm doing this for me. If you happen to get turned on or excited or get an orgasm, that's totally fine. But you don't have to for my sake, because I'm taken care of. I just like your scent and your warmth and your wetness, and I'm just going to exult. And that way, she's free. She can do whatever she wants.
I can already feel that in my body. I'm like, oh, this already feels like, it's like I am having the experience of, oh, I don't actually have to do anything. It's like I can actually relax into that when someone says this is actually
because,
for me.
As you know from your coaching practice, people often mess themselves up by having goals with sex. But, you know, the sexual mind, if it's very infantile, as I'm suggesting, if the sexual mind is never more than 2 years old, at 2 years old, I'm going to understand what a goal is. And so if you have a goal of making my partner excited or doing it in the right way that they'll forget their last boyfriend or, you know, love me or be appreciative and so forth, you're going to get messed up because your sexual system is too young for that. It doesn't really understand goals. All it understands is stuffing its face with ice cream and having everybody say, yay, that's the level at which it lives.
Are you ready for a career that lights you up, helps you serve humanity, and assists in a global shift around sex, love, and relating? Did you know that sexuality development is one of the fastest growing industries right now? The Institute of New Paradigm Intimacy is a course in cutting-edge sexual wellness education, business, and leadership. Utilizing the self-pleasure modality created by Victoria Redbard to have clients access freedom and connection in all areas of life. If you're feeling the pull to explore more, head to victoriaredbard.com/podcast. And have you ever recommended that to someone to take ice cream into the bedroom and say, yay?
Did you ever read 50 Shades of Grey?
What did you say?
Did you ever read 50 Shades of Grey?
Is that what happens in 50 Shades of Grey? I missed that part.
It's the beginning of book two.
All right.
He's kinky and she's vanilla. And so they decide they're going to do something vanilla. So he brings vanilla ice cream and drips it on her. It's a great scene.
Classic.
So, yeah. Ice cream is great. I don't know if you do this in your own practice, but I see a lot of people who really just don't have that much of a pleasure orientation. So I suggest something we call the two-step. I actually invented it. It's in chapter 6 of my book. Step 2 is to do something erotic, whatever you're going to do. And step 1 is a mindfulness practice. It's just take a couple of minutes, lie in bed, forget about your partner, just breathe, and notice the temperature of your body and notice where your body makes contact with the mattress and your weight of your body in the mattress. And kind of be in the moment, like the mindfulness people say, without judgment. Pay attention to what's going on. And then you turn to your partner. And a lot of people feel a little shy about doing that. So I have them practice with ice cream. I say, do a little mindfulness in the kitchen and then open the refrigerator and take some ice cream or whatever it is and just eat it mindfully. Just experience it, roll it around in your mouth, mush it around, inhale its scent, swallow it. And if you do this right, as you know, swallowing is an amazing thing. Oh my God, this thing, my muscles and fit throat do, and then it's gone. It's an amazing thing if you think about it. So you have people do it with food first. And then once they do it with food, then they can do it with their partner. Mm-hmm. And I say, consume your partner like they were a cupcake. Just eat them up.
It's beautiful. And, I think that, there's a concept, I think, that most people I see want to have that experience of consuming their partner. And yes. When they actually come into it, it's almost like they're struggling to, it's like it's so vulnerable in those long-term relationships of people to actually have that experience of consuming them. It's almost like the fear of judgment all of a sudden comes in. And how do you get people to move past that experience of the fear of the rejection inside of their relationship?
As I'm sure you know, one of the biggest impediments that people experience in sexual counseling is a sense of hopelessness. Mm. Is it going to work for everybody else? It's not going to work for me. There's something wrong with me. First of all, there's something wrong with me that I'm even here. Most people don't need help with this. Why do I need help with this? What's wrong with us? And it's very, very discouraging for people. So I like to see if I can make people laugh a little bit. That sometimes helps them break up the tension. And if they can laugh together a little bit. And I like to, so I wrote my book. I tried to make it a little funny because people like to laugh. People get so worked up a little about sex. You have to make people see the oddity in it. And the other thing is for a person to realize their sense of hopelessness about themselves. As you know, from the mindfulness field, if you're experiencing hopeless feeling, this isn't going to work, this never works for me, nothing like this ever works for me, you just notice that as a thought. And as the Buddhists say, let your thoughts come into your home, but don't serve them tea. So you just observe, yes, I'm just having those hopeless feelings. Yeah, I have those sometimes. Okay, what comes next? And let me direct my attention back to my partner's skin. And at that point, it's just decatastrophized. And that way, a person can sometimes feel a greater sense of hope and a greater sense of inspiration. I liken it sometimes to for those people who are religious. If you're religious, doesn't mean you're going to feel inspired all the time. Inspiration happens sometimes, and other times it doesn't happen. And sometimes it happens a lot. Sometimes it happens a little bit, and it's all fun. Whatever happens.
That's perfect. Yeah, I love that explanation. There's one final piece I feel that to share around how what I've seen in the work of sex therapy and, working in the space of sexuality development is that when somebody starts to move through these experiences of their fear of rejection or their desire to step into that flow state with sexuality, it seems to open up a lot of other things in their life, like their career path or more access to money and experience of wealth and abundance and better relationships and more freedom in all areas of life. Is this absolutely something that you've seen in your, you've seen that?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think some people make a compromise, an unconscious compromise with themselves if they don't really feel deserving of those good things. Person, say, gets married and they make an unconscious compromise. I'm going to be allowed to get married, but I'm not going to be allowed to enjoy it. Sometimes people make that compromise with sex. If you allow myself to have sex, but I'm not going to allow myself to really enjoy it. And so if you say, well, I'm entitled. I can enjoy it. Yeah, you sure? Yeah, no, it's okay. You just enjoy it. That's hard for people to swallow. But sometimes if you do cross that bridge, then all sorts of other good things can come. I agree with you.
Powerful. Well, that's really what I wanted to speak to you about today, is this process of how sexuality development and sex therapy can open up so many other areas of our life. And it's something that I've been really studying and researching recently. So it's quite exciting to see that, you know, a lot of us are coming up with similar things.
I know I'm supposed to be the one who's being interviewed here, but I would be very curious. What would you say sexuality development? Can you tell me more what you do?
Sure. So, I mean, for me, sexuality development is very similar to what I experienced with self-development. And when I started accessing this personal development world, self-development world, I started to see it was very much around accessing more of the identity and having more range in our experiences of who we are as a personality. Mm-hmm. And what I experienced sexual development is almost like another access. It's like it's like moving away from this identity space and actually into like a different experience of meeting the nothingness. It's like, who are we beyond that personality? You spoke a little bit about what actually lights up your soul. And I think that's a very similar experience to what I'm speaking of. It's like, what happens when we get past the identity? And I think that's where our sexuality really exists. As you said, it's not when we're 2 years old, we don't have a strong sense of self and a strong sense of who we are. And that's actually what creates the best sexual experiences, I think, that people have, is when they're not attached to this is who I am and therefore I must have sex in a certain way.
Yes.
So what I've been exploring is like what happens in that space beyond identity. And I think that's where sexuality development lives.
Wow. Okay. That's pretty advanced. I think for most people, the step that I see as most crucial is a kind of an earlier step. Until you get there, before you can get there, I use a lot of the concept of differentiation. This is used in psychology where most people are trying to work with the other person so that both people are going to feel the same thing or both people are going to think the same thing. There's too much we and there's not enough I. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that happens in sex therapy done well is people differentiate more. They become more of an I, which everybody is going to think is unromantic. Because, what happened to me. But if you do it right, something about there being the two people, each very tuned into their own experience, that's really where you get really the peak experience of arousal. And sometimes you do get the magic there, if people are really differentiated, that you can get some of these, as you say, these fusion or these selfless experience. But it almost has to go through the path of you got to be a little bit more of a self before you can be less of a self. I don't know. It's a little metaphysical, but that would be my reaction to what you're saying, at least from the standpoint of what I see. Maybe I'm seeing people at a different stage of development. Maybe I'm seeing people perhaps at a little bit earlier stage of development.
It's possible. A lot of the people that I work with now are in the space of wanting to become sexuality practitioners, so that it's definitely...
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. No, for me, most of people are just having bad sex and wanting to have better sex.
You're on the front lines. Major respect.
I'm a first-grade teacher, you're a sixth-grade teacher.
Love it. I've had so much fun talking to you today, Stevens. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Victoria. Pleasure. Anything else that we should talk about before we stop, or are we
just, if there's anything that you want to share about where people can find you or learn more about your work, you're more than welcome to share.
Sure. I'm at sexualityresource.com, blog articles and various kinds of things. I'm on Twitter at Sexuality Today, and my book is Love Worth Making, and it's available on Amazon and everything and on Kindle and all that stuff. So be interested if anyone interested in giving reactions, and always eager to hear how people experience these things.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you so much.
Have a beautiful day.
Nice to talk to you.
Bye.